Sexy and Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR.
Now I had the time of my life. No, I never felt like this before. Yes, I swear it's a truth, and I owe it all to you.
'Cause I had the time of my life, and I owe it all to you.
I've been waiting for so long, now I finally found someone to stand by me.
We saw the writing on the wall, and we felt this magical fantasy.
Now with passion in our eyes, there's no way we could disguise it secretly. So we take each other's hand, 'cause we seem to understand the urgency. Just remember,
you're the one thing
I can't keep up.
So I'll tell you something,
this could be done.
Well, 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 welcome to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. Or perhaps you're one of our podcast listeners, but however you've decided to spend the hour with us, we're very, very, very glad to have you. I'm very excited tonight because we're going to be talking about marriage, which is something that we don't always talk about on this show, but I think it's really important. And the secrets of great marriages, which I'm very excited about because I have the co-authors on, Charlie and Linda Bloom. And I really like it because, as I was mentioning to Linda just on the phone in our pre-interview chat, one of the things I find in Vancouver a lot is one of the most common things I hear is, was that a date? Or there are no people to date in Vancouver. And then even when we do go out and meet somebody, we're not even quite sure if it's a date. So we're sometimes in that space. The other thing I wanted to say is at this top of the hour, I did put on I've Had the Time of My Life, the theme song from Dirty Dancing, which I thought was owed to all those couples out there who are getting married, and I'm very excited about that. And with that are actually hiring dance instructors because I think that's kind of a cool, really fun dance to do. And I'm very, very excited to be chatting about marriage because I think all of us do want to get married, or at least a lot of us do, or at least have long-term relationships where they're fulfilling, we're happy. And a lot of times it starts off boy meets girl, girl meets boy, we fall in love, we walk down the aisle and hope to live happily ever after. And sometimes I wonder, because in today's fast food society, it can be hard to believe in the ever after, let alone meaning that it can last long enough to be happy. But there is evidence out there that marriages can last long enough to experience ever after. And that's why I'm very, very excited to be having the co-authors of Secrets of Great Marriages, the real truth from real couples about lasting love, Linda and Charlie Bloom. And welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
You're
good
welcome
to be here.
Well, it's really great to have you, and I'm excited because you're educators and you're relationship therapists as well, and I think that's really fantastic. And not only that, you've, as it describes in your book, you've really walked the walk as well. You've been married for over 35 years, which I think, congratulations.
Yeah. It's quite an accomplishment in these day and age with all the pressures to be able to stay together and to be happy.
It really is, and I applaud you for that. Not only are you doing it, you're showing others how to do it, and not only that, you actually have concrete evidence in your book, so it's really exciting, and just you've got different types of marriages as well, which I think is fantastic. So in regards to everything, how did you get, welcome to the show, first of all, and as well, I just wanted to just let everybody know in case our listeners, because we do have some people who do like listening, streaming as well, if we could plug your website as well, because I believe it's bloomwork.com.
That's right.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure because I was checking out there and you've got so many great classes as well, and I was wishing, which let's hope if I have a listener out there who might want to book them so they can come to Vancouver so we can have them face-to-face to do some classes, that would be absolutely fantastic because they've got some great stuff on there. And as well as that, they are available if you'd like to book an appointment doing some phone counseling as well or via Skype, which I think is fabulous because then you can see each other face-to-face. So what I loved is the fact that your book is also endorsed by Pavel Hendricks, who is the author of Getting the Love That You Want. And I just wanted to say, would you describe some of the stories in your book as getting the love you want in action in terms of some of the just the practices where when it's actually working and how to work through things?
Absolutely. You know, we interviewed over 50 couples.
Wow.
Really happy couples. So one of the things we're trying to do is to, you know, break up this myth that there's not any happy couples out there, because there really are. There's a lot of happy couples out there. We had more referrals of people telling us, you really have to interview this one and that one and the other one, more than we could interview.
Wow.
And so we narrowed it down to the 27 couples in the book because it would have just been overwhelming. It would have been too heavy a tome. And the couples who ended up in the final version, they weren't necessarily the happiest couples of all, but they illustrated the points that we wanted to make. And one of the points that we wanted to make is that these couples did not luck into this beautiful marriage.
Mm.
They worked for it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes people have a mistaken idea that you know, well, maybe there are a few happy couples out there. They just happen to be one of the few blessed ones that found their soulmate. Mm-hmm. And every couple that we talked to had had some difficulty, some challenge, you know, some breakdown at some point along the way. And they paid attention and they learned how to deal with their differences. They learned how to, you know, put that blended family together. They learned how to deal with the financial or the professional or, you know, the health problems, whatever they were. And they were a resilient, committed, responsible bunch of folks.
Wow. How would you describe a happy marriage, just for our listeners out there? Because as you said, sometimes we think that there are none. So how would you describe it, just so we know it, when we, so we can recognize it when we see it?
Well, one of the things I'd say it isn't is that people are happy all the time.
Hmm.
I think that there's it's like there's two groups of people out there who both think that they have an idea of what that means, and I think neither one of them is really clear about the reality of what a happy marriage means. A lot of people think that there just aren't many people at all out there who have what they would consider to be the kind of relationship that they would like to have, and they're kind of skeptical, and you know, some are even cynical about the possibilities. And then there are people who think that if you find the right person and you have the kind of marriage that you really want to have, then you'll always be happy, and that, you know, there won't be any arguments and there won't be any difficult times, and that things will really be great, and that on a consistent basis. And then, of course, when they're not, which in all marriages there are times that things aren't great.
Mm-hmm.
But if people have the expectation that they should be, then what happens is that when they hit the inevitable rough spots periodically, they can begin to think, oh, you know, this is not the right person, or, you know, we're just not compatible, because if we were, we would never have these differences. So what I would say, I wouldn't so much speak in terms of a happy couple, because that kind of suggests a consistent mood.
Hmm.
I would say people who are a successful marriage, in my view, is a relationship in which both people have a high level of respect and care and appreciation of each other, where they have a high level of skillfulness in terms of being able to work with and not only resolve differences, but really appreciate the differences. That they see that, yeah, we, you know, there are places where we are not completely in sync with each other, but those differences actually make the relationship more interesting and more rich and deeper. After all, if we were both exactly alike and we didn't have any differences, while we probably would get along pretty well, there wouldn't be a lot of juice. There wouldn't be an edge in the relationship that would provoke us to go to places in ourselves and in our life that we wouldn't ordinarily go to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, to me, a matter of being happy all the time. It's a matter of whether or not the two people can experience this relationship in a way that is fulfilling, enriching, comforting, supportive, and overall get a sense of enhanced well-being out of their connection with each other.
I really like that, the enhanced well-being.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really neat that it can be. So it's almost as if the marriage is basically by embracing the differences where you can heal and continue to grow. In some
very
ways.
Important. We found a theme that ran through all of the couples that we interviewed that were so highly successful, that the trust was high.
Hmm.
They had this feeling of a sense of security, but it wasn't a stagnant. Do you know that there was this element of challenge because they had a personal growth orientation always learning, always growing. So I think it's that winning combination of the trust and security so that you can go deep, you can have a very emotionally intimate connection, people can be real, they can feel that they're accepted as is, but there is this edge, you know, of challenge, that you don't take each other for granted, that you keep reinventing yourself and the relationship. It was actually inspirational to be around these people because they were very alive.
What did you find you learned the most as you went through the process of doing the interviewing and the writing?
I'm sorry, I didn't get the question.
What did you find you learned the most through the process of actually compiling the information for the book? Like, as you interviewed each couple, were there certain ones that kind of hit home when you heard their stories where it was like, okay, and what did you learn from it?
Okay, I'll just give you a couple of things from my experience, and then Linda can
Linda.
Do it from hers. But I think one of the things that was most impressive to me was that some of my beliefs were challenged about what I had previously thought was kind of a necessary ingredient for a great marriage, is that people had to have had a healthy childhood, and that if they didn't have kind of psychologically healthy past, that their chances of creating a good relationship were very limited. And one of the things that we found is that there were all kinds of people in this book that we interviewed, and some of them had extremely difficult histories in terms of their relationship history and in terms of their childhood. And, you know, coming from a psychological background, we both have a tendency to look at the past as a kind of a predictor for the future, and it just isn't so. That the main variable that determined the quality of relationships that people had wasn't the kind of childhood that they had, and it wasn't how much education they had, it had really very little to do with their past. Not that that's not a factor, but it wasn't as big a factor as we thought. But the real factor was their level of intentionality, their level of commitment, and their willingness to take responsibility for doing the work that they needed to do to be able to sustain and to develop the kind of relationship that they really wanted. So, for example, a person who has had a difficult past but who is absolutely, completely committed to doing what they need to do to create the relationship of their dreams is much more likely to create that than a person who has had a much more positive past, a much easier, much healthier, let's say, less stressful past, but doesn't have a high level of commitment and intentionality. So a bigger factor than your past is your level of intentionality and your willingness to take responsibility for doing the work that you really, that all relationships require you to do. That was a big teaching for me.
How about for you, Linda?
You know, I was relieved to find that out. And I think it's very encouraging for the people who come from families that didn't have a good model of what a marriage could be, that you can use your imagination and you can look around at other people around you and sort of put a composite together. I mean, I like how these people are parenting their children, and I like how this couple is divvying up the chores that need to be done in the house and the child care, and I really like how these people work with their differences. But I'll tell you that there was something that struck me, and it really touched me, the quality of resilience. Because you know how the Buddhists say that into every life comes the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows? You know, if we live long enough, we're going to have some difficulties. And these couples were chance at the rebound effect, you know, coming back after adversity. We had four couples in the book who lost a significant amount of the family fortune. You know, they got in, one of the couples got into a lot of trouble with the IRS, and because of fines and penalties, it just got into the thousands of dollars. And another couple went into business, and they got way over their head. They tied up all the money they had in the business, and the business failed, and they absolutely ended up homeless for several months. They had to just move into with some friends. They put their dogs and their kids and just had to, you know, rely on friends till they got back on their feet. And there were serious health problems. One of the couples had one of their children die. And we're talking, you know, serious, like life-threatening illness in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
And these couples just used whatever life handed them. Rather than being ground down by the adversity, they ended up closer with each other, and they were more bonded, and they stood together. It was very touching to talk, particularly to the men in the couples who had lost the money.
Mm-hmm.
They were so ashamed, and they were so embarrassed that they had, you know, mishandled the money. They felt a keener sense of responsibility than the women.
Mm.
And the women stood by them. And they said, you know, I believe in you, and I don't hold you any more responsible than I hold myself. I don't blame you. And I know that you've got what it takes. You'll make more money. We'll make our fortune again. And they all did. So this quality of resilience, the ability to use what life hands you and bounce back, really touched me.
I'd like to just also add one more thing that
please
something that we refer to as enlightened self-interest that all of these couples shared, and basically what that refers to is it's the understanding and the trust that what makes my partner more happy and more fulfilled in their life ultimately benefits me as well. When you really trust that, and when two people both trust that, and they're both working to support each other in fulfilling their deepest dreams without, of course, sacrificing their own well-being. I'm not talking about somebody who's codependent and, you know, needs to caretake the other person.
But mm-hmm.
I'm talking about somebody who is responsibly taking care of themselves and at the same time committed to having their partner live a fulfilling life and looks for opportunities to make them happier. When two people are operating on that wavelength, it's an absolutely unstoppable momentum that keeps regenerating and continually deepening the quality of connection in the relationship. So one of the things that we would hear people say who are grounded in this sense of enlightened self-interest and who practice it is that, you know, I just keep thinking that we've hit the top of the chart and things can't get any better, and they just keep getting better.
That's really inspiring.
It is. It is very inspiring. We were deeply inspired in speaking to these people.
Mm-hmm. One of the things you'd mentioned earlier was the fact that we keep changing, and in terms of the persistence, the resilience, as we keep growing from just working and just embracing those differences from the other person. How would you say in terms of with the relationships, that what are some of the things that we can start looking for at the beginning of a relationship, like when you're getting into it, like some key things to look for or to be open to, perhaps when you're trying to see if this is going to be somebody that could possibly be my life partner?
You know, we have a lot of single people in our network too. They're not all coupled up.
Okay.
And they ask us this question about what should I be looking for in the other person? And I always tell them the same thing. I think it's really important to find out whether the person has a growth orientation.
Okay.
Whether personal growth is important to them. Now, if you ask somebody that question, they're going to say, oh, yes, of course, I think personal growth is important. And I think you have to be in relationship with people a while
okay. So
you can find out whether they're really going to come up with the goods or not.
Okay.
Like, if you hit a little rough spot, you know, if you have a difference, if there's some breakdown, if you've got an agreement, then an agreement gets broken, you know, this is when you're going to find out whether the person's willing to take a look inside themselves, take a responsibility for the breakdown, whether they're willing to get vulnerable, whether they're willing to apologize, whether they're willing to, you know, some people just distract and change the subject, or, you know, they bolt and they don't want to deal. And I think it's really important, and it shows you whether you've got a player. If they're really willing to show up and discuss it till it gets complete. And, you know, you can maybe agree to disagree, but you have a deeper understanding of why the person says the way they, what they say, why they do what they do, why they have the beliefs that they have, why they have the values that they have. And Charlie and I, when we teach our classes, you know, we talk all the time about how the opposites attract.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's wonderful. It's nice when you have things in common with people. And, of course, that's a good idea to have some things in common. You like to do some of the same things. But we also believe in this. The deeper, deep in the psyche, people are attracted to somebody who's somewhat different than they. Because the other person will have strengths that we don't have, and vice versa. And there is this drive for mastery, and that we want to be fuller, you know, more well-rounded, more whole, and that this other person can influence us in a way that we may not be as developed yet. Now, the same things that are so magnetic and attract us to that person can drive us a little nuts after a while. But if we can keep opening to it, that is a really good growth opportunity there.
So how do we continue to open to it? Because I know sometimes there is the classic boy meets girl, girl meets boy, boy meets boy, boy meet girl meets girl. And I find sometimes at the very beginning, it's just almost like being starstruck, where everything just seems amazing about that person. So maybe something, for example, like, you know, like, I love that my boyfriend works out, and maybe a year or two into the relationship, all of a sudden it's like, oh, he's so selfish. He's going to the gym to go work out. Why isn't he spending time with me? Like, where does that, how do we keep that just that admiration and respect for the people as we continue through the relationship, where that we don't change our minds about things and keep trying to fix them?
I think one of the things that is helpful is if we can keep in mind that when we're in the early stages of a romance, we're literally not seeing clearly.
Okay.
The word infatuation literally means to be out of your mind.
To be, really?
You know, it's a state of temporary insanity where we're not seeing clearly who this person is. We're seeing through idealized pictures. And that's kind of nature's way to hook us into falling in love, so that we'll mate and we'll, you know, continue to reproduce and, you know, perpetuate the species. But what goes up must come down. And it's inevitable that what we are smitten with early on will at some point, you know, if we're lucky, you know, we might get a year or two even out of it before we come to our senses and see this person in a more balanced way, which is that they're not completely, you know, they're not a saint. They're not perfect. But at the same time, there's a tendency when we begin to see their shadow side to think, oh, boy, now, and then we see them as being demonic. So we can swing between they're, you know, they're an angel or they're a demon. And the truth is that they're neither. And they have some parts to them
both
that are much more appealing than others,
mm-hmm.
just as we do.
Mm-hmm.
So to keep that in mind, so that when, you know, when the inevitable disillusionment period occurs, we take it in, to, you know, we put it in perspective and see, oh, okay, well, this is, you know, now I'm seeing in a more balanced way, you know, some of this person's weaknesses or flaws or whatever, and I'm seeing that they're not perfect, but, you know, they're neither perfect nor totally imperfect. This is part of the process.
Okay. So how do we, as we keep acknowledging that this is the person, we start going along and accepting that this is a more balanced state where it's never going to hit that infatuation again.
Yeah.
How do we keep things going in terms of the spark and not giving up on the relationship? Because I think a lot of people do give up at that
stage. I know they do. And one of the simplest answer to that question is you start, you tell the truth. You just keep telling the truth to yourself and to each other. And the truth never really has anything to do with judgments that you have about the other person, but it really has to do with, this is what I'm experiencing.
Hmm.
This is what I'm feeling. This is what I'm thinking. This is what I'm needing. These are my fears. These are my emotions. This is what's going on for me.
Okay.
And when two people can be in dialogue at a level of emotional honesty without attacking or criticizing or blaming each other for what they're experiencing, and simply have this ongoing exchange of information in terms of, I'm concerned about this, I'm feeling upset about this, I'm appreciating this, the good and the bad, then that is the antidote to the kind of negative self-talk that we can get into when we start talking ourselves into believing that this just can't work. And we're not saying that all relationships are meant to work and that they all can work, because certainly there are relationships that are genuinely just bad matches. But you can't really tell whether or not that's the case until you've really been rigorous about being emotionally honest with each other. And one of two things will happen if two people can practice that on a sustained basis. They will either get closer and want to stay together, or it will become increasingly evident that they just are very badly matched and it's better not to stay together. It'll become evident one way or the other. But it's amazing how few people really do practice consistent emotional honesty.
Should we be doing that in all facets of our life, then, not just with the person that we're sexually and emotionally involved with, but with everyone, our friends, our family as well?
Well, of course.
Okay.
Particularly with ourselves, because
yes.
A lot of the times we don't tell the truth to ourselves. We make up stories, we make up justifications, rationalizations, excuses, and so we don't really feel like we're lying to the other person, but we're lying to ourselves by not being totally honest with ourselves. About things.
I was just going to ask, how do you keep the ego out of it? Where, because I know for myself, sometimes I'll actually ask myself, is it my ego talking or is it actually the truth? And 90% of the time, my initial reaction, it's usually ego. And once I can just let that settle, I can actually look at what's actually really happening, and then I'll usually speak then.
Linda, you want to speak to
me? Well, I think you're on the right track here, that you just have to keep self-observing.
Okay.
And just going down, you know, as deeply as you possibly can to contact the real truth that's under there. And it's an arduous process. When we're blessed to find somebody who's willing to do it with us, now that's a good contract. You know, that we want to be real with each other. We want to be authentic with each other. We want to come out from behind the image that we project and, you know, the big ego presentation that we perfected all our lifetime to look good. And we value authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the couples that we interviewed, I got the big kick out of this. They said, we don't do nice. We do real. So sometimes it's not pretty, you know, how we interact with each other, but that is our value, to be real with each other. And so when people are committed to authenticity, the way the couples in this book have been for years, the depth of their knowing themselves and each other is profound.
Mm-hmm.
And so they know that they've got flaws. They know each other's flaws quite well, and they love each other as is. Do you know?
Unconditional.
They say, I've got my golden self, and I've got my dark self, and my shadow self, and I want you to know who I am. I'm always committed to making my golden self be even more golden. I want to evolve. And I'm wanting to know my dark side so that it doesn't interfere. I don't want my manipulator, or my little, you know, bratty, acting out self or my selfish self to interfere with my relationship. I'm committed to living with you with harmlessness as a goal and don't want to hurt you. So we're going to be in league with each other to call forth the best of who we can be. You see what a powerful contract that is? When they're in league with each other to get beyond the petty and get beyond the ego presentation and to really go for the depth.
So they're, in other words, they're on Team Us as opposed to on Team Me or on Team You. It's Team Us where we're in it together. We're on the same side.
Yes, that's playing team and with the goal of our development. To develop as a couple, to develop as a family, to develop as individuals. One of the things that really touched me about interviewing these couples that I was so inspired about, we ended up calling it believing eyes. They look at each other through believing eyes rather than fault-finding eyes or critical eyes. They saw the beauty, they saw the gifts, they saw the talent, they saw the passion, they saw the uniqueness in each other. And they frequently commented, just spontaneously in the middle of the interview. I remember interviewing one of the couples, and she said something. I don't even remember exactly what it is right now. And then he said, you see why I love her so much? It was really sweet. And then twice we had men say about the women, she's a saint. They were referring to the early years when they were less mature and less evolved and not so conscious, and how the woman stood by them, do you know, when they were doing some things that weren't really that great for the relationship. And it was sweet. The women did it with the men, too, that they saw the goodness in the other person, and they were, you know, spontaneously testifying to the beauty that they saw in the other person. And, of course, when you're seen through eyes like that, it can help you get over your doubts or your feelings of inadequacy. To have somebody that you trust, who knows you well, who sees you with that level of respect, really calls you forth to be your great self.
Mm-hmm. So if they're looking at you in believing eyes and they tell you that maybe something that you're doing isn't quite working, and I'm going to use an example of another couple that I know in real life that has been together for over 20 years that actually runs Kokoro Dance and the Vancouver International Dance Festival. And one of the things that struck me was because they're a couple that work together as well and have been for well over 20 years and have four children too. And one of the things they said in the interview was the fact that one of them will choreograph a piece, the other one will go and tear it apart and fix it, but they'd rather do that with each other first because they know that they'll get total honesty about it in terms of the creative process before bringing it out to the general public. And I thought that was really wonderful and really inspiring to have a relationship like that where you can work together that way too. It's just that trust.
I admire it.
I think it's something to really aspire to, and I also think that there's an awful lot of people who aren't quite up to that level of honest feedback. So it's a very, I think it's very dependent upon each relationship and each person and each relationship in terms of what, you know, what they are up to receiving. And I think it's important that there be respect for each person's level of receptivity to to that kind of feedback. I think it's great that that couple is able to be ruthlessly honest with each other, you know, in an artistic way, in terms of giving them the professional artistic feedback that can be really useful for them in terms of becoming more more skilled in their work. And I wouldn't prescribe that to every couple unless there was an understanding and an agreement with both people that that's what they're, you know, that's the level of feedback that they're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that it's important to distinguish between giving somebody an opinion about what they're doing and sharing with them your emotional experience of how it affects you for them to be doing or saying certain things. So I think it's really important that we are aware of how our actions and words affect the people in our lives. And that's not the same thing as knowing what everybody's opinion is about what we're saying or doing. You know what I mean?
I do, and I was going to ask, what would you recommend in terms of some tools that people could be doing just to strengthen so they can differentiate even within themselves, like what our opinion is and what is the truth, and in terms of that?
If they pause and
breathe,
reflect on what they're going to say before it comes shooting out their mouth.
Which is easier said than done, by the way.
This is a talking meditation, you know, to pause and reflect. Because people tend to be judgment machines.
And yes,
they
we are.
Throw around their opinions, and they throw around their judgments, and they throw around their critical remarks and wound other people.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't even realize they're doing it. They've often been brought up in an environment where people talk to each other that way, and they just continue to do it. And if you can stop yourself from this, interrupt the pattern, and think about what it is that you want to convey. This emotional honesty is not bludgeoning other people with your opinions and your judgments.
Mm-hmm.
Emotional honesty is talking about yourself, about what you feel. Do you know?
Mm-hmm.
I feel inspired. I feel sad. I feel frightened. I feel angry. I feel resentful. I feel enlivened by this conversation.
Mm.
But if you talk about yourself, it doesn't guarantee that you're not going to hurt anybody. It doesn't guarantee that you're not going to invite, you know, some kind of resistance. But you're on safer ground if you're talking about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
If you comes out of your mouth, you're already in trouble. Because you're probably going to be making some kind of a judgment and throwing an opinion around about somebody else rather than talking about yourself and your own experience.
Okay. I like that, and I may have to quote you on that if that's all right at some point.
Quote me.
Okay. What do you think is the secret in terms of marriages as they continue to grow? Because I know we've talked a lot, especially because a lot of our listenership do tend to be in the first stages of either dating. But in terms of, because most of these couples have been together minimum 15 years that you interviewed, what is the secret as we continue to evolve? Because I almost think, like, for example, my boyfriend and I have known each other for 10 years, and we finally got together 2 years ago. But and one of the things that at the very beginning he used to say all the time was, I can't believe I didn't, you know, I never put two and two together 10 years ago. And my whole thing was, I used to say to him, well, I'm not who I am now. But I was a different person than I needed to grow into who I am, as you need to grow into who you are now before we could see each other for who we are. So I don't know what your thoughts are in regards to, because I do feel like I've grown a lot in like the last 10 years, for example. And I like to think that we continue to evolve, and if we do evolve, and how do we keep making sure we grow together, I guess is the question.
Well, that, of course, is a very, that's a very powerful question, and I think that we all want to believe that we will grow together. We hope that we will, but you know, the reality is that when people grow, that is, and when I use that term, what I'm referring to is the process of evolving into your authentic self, to really living an authentic life in which you are integrity with the truth of who you are moment to moment. Now, when you stop trying to be the person that you think you should be and start committing yourself to being and embodying the person that you are, there's no way of knowing who that person's going to be. And I'm not saying that, you know, if you're not careful, or you could be some kind of a monster if you don't control yourself. I don't believe that that's true. I think that if we give ourselves permission to live authentically, ultimately we become more sensitive, more loving, more connected to the truth, and more respectful of ourselves and other people. But personalities can change. People who fit each other at one point in their lives can at another point in their lives feel like the fit isn't quite the same if one person grows in a different direction than the other one does. And that's one of the reasons that so many people try to, you know, so many of us try to control our partner out of fear that they don't grow in a way or in a direction that no longer fits us. And when two people are doing that to each other, their relationship begins to suffocate. It becomes contracted rather than expansive. And we do it out of fear. You know, we do it out of the fear that, you know, you might become somebody or I might become somebody that, you know, we know that no longer has a good fit with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So it requires a certain amount of adventurous spirit and courage to really commit yourself to a growth path and to a relationship, because there's no guarantee that they're both going to be in sync with each other forever.
Okay, so as a human being, because a lot of times I think we do experience a lot of flight or fight syndrome,
mm-hmm.
where we either want to run or we just want to put up our fists and just protect ourselves with our shield of emotional armor. What would you recommend in terms of learning how to trust both the growth process as well as we indulge in our relationships and continue to let them evolve and try and let them evolve in a healthy way and not control? What would you recommend?
Great question.
You ask great questions.
Oh, thank you.
I think that there is a process that is enormously helpful when we find that we want to have our dukes up and fight them or to flight, you know, we want to run away. That typically happens when the emotional arousal is so strong and that we're frightened in that moment. And so to not go to fight or flight and to go to the third option requires really developing strength and self-discipline to stay put, but not to fight back.
Okay.
And this is a process. Most of us in our relationships get more opportunities to practice this one than we really want to. It's painful, but it's good for us. And the skill is to dive down underneath the irritation and irritability, go under the anger, because there's always pain or fear or both underneath, and contact the deeper emotions and speak from there.
Okay.
It doesn't ensure that when we get vulnerable, they'll get vulnerable too. But it increases the chances that they will meet us there. It just takes one brave person to do that and to take that first step, because vulnerability generally invites vulnerability and defensiveness usually invites defensiveness. So if we can drop down to speaking from that vulnerable place deep in our heart, then we can hook up with the other person. And, you know, they may be frightened or hurting too.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can speak about what scares us and what hurts us. And we're linked heart to heart. So then the challenge is the issue, not the other person.
That makes sense. So in pulling out the subjectivity, so in terms of, like, just not making it I guess basically, like, if I'm going to compare it to basically volunteering on a committee for a not-for-profit, where it actually goes back to your mission statement. In other words, like what you're actually there for, as opposed to the color of the table napkins, for example, if you're planning a benefit to raise money to finish that. And that probably wasn't the best parallel, but...
No, I think it's a great...
Is it all right?
...analogy, absolutely.
Okay.
To really be mindful of what is my ultimate purpose being in this relationship. What is my intention?
And you'd mentioned that all of the marriages that, and for the ones that you interviewed, for the ones that are in the book, and you interviewed 50 altogether, that in the intention, just that having that really strong intention was really, really key, that the resilience as well. And I want to use the word persistence, just in terms of where they just kept working, even as life threw them some really challenging situations, including financial stuff, which... a lot of couples don't survive that. It's exciting. I was I was thinking, this is almost like, I know it's going to sound silly, but a lot of times, a lot of women I know, we grew up almost thinking that we're going to be like Cinderella, where we're going to grow up and get to live happily ever after. And what I like about this is there's a lot of optimism in the book and the stories. And I like that, because it's almost like, I'd like to think of this as like this era. It's what we need in terms of our fairy tales, which is what we should be teaching our children.
Absolutely. You know, there is a lot of optimism and hopefulness, and it's not a fairy tale kind of the ever after optimism that, you know, everything is going to just be fine and there's not going to be any problems.
Mm-hmm.
Realistic optimism. It's an optimism that's grounded in responsibility and maturity, and a willingness to really acknowledge and accept the power and the responsibility that I have to shape and influence the quality of this relationship that we both do, and that we exercise that power in a committed, responsible way. It's trusting that if we both embrace that, there's no reason why we cannot get through whatever is that life is going to serve up to.
There's a lot of power in being with someone. It's I'm almost thinking of it as sometimes when the world throws storms at us, it's just holding on to each other and just trusting and working through it together, that things can keep working and grow from it, which is exciting. And there's a lot of storms that get thrown at a lot of the people in the books, and that you must see in your practice as well. As a closing for the show, because we're just getting towards the very end, what would you recommend if you could wave a magic wand and change the curriculum that we're teaching in the school systems, both in Canada and the States, in regards to sexual education and romance and love?
I would really like to see more honest relating, more truth-telling, more communication skills, conflict management skills, problem-solving skills, and particularly in the area of sexuality. We're in the 21st century, and it's somewhat, you know, embarrassing for people to speak more openly, and I think it would be fabulous if there was more open dialogue. I know that there are controversial issues. A lot of families don't want their kids talking about sexuality in school because they have their very strict attitudes and think that it should only be talked about in the family. But a lot of families aren't doing a very good job talking openly with the kids. They're just learning from each other.
Mm-hmm.
So if there could be more normalizing of the confusion that the kids in high schools have. And, you know, even at the college level, I think there could be more open dialogue, and that it would be useful, particularly the different genders. We're so much more alike than we are different. And for the girls to hear from the guys that they sometimes feel very inept and don't know what to say and don't know what to do, and the girls need to reassure the guys and say, ask, girl. Just ask me. Talk to me. Talk to me about it. And I think that it would be a healing all around. There was a more open dialogue.
And Shirley, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think Linda said it all. I think that this open dialogue not only needs to take place between the couple, within the couple relationship, but in terms of education, I think that to make our curriculum more experiential.
Okay.
Instead of having teachers lecture from a lesson plan about what kids need to know, which they probably already know anyway,
mm-hmm.
it's to really give them a chance to, in groups, situations, to talk more openly about their concerns, their questions, and to maybe illuminate some of the myths that people have about relationships and sexuality, because there's an awful lot of misinformation out there, and people don't really know, young people don't know the difference between what's just kind of cultural myths that are being held, and some of the parents don't know the difference either.
Mm-hmm.
So to really open up a forum in which young people feel comfortable expressing their questions, their concerns, and having some of their beliefs challenged in a respectful way, I think it would be very, very powerful.
I think so, too. So with the excitement of having this book out as well, with Secrets of Great Marriages, which I hope that all the kids, as we hopefully change the curriculum, actually my old co-host for a radio show that I used to do before this one, actually just rewrote the curriculum for the Yukon School District, which I was pretty excited about. And so hopefully some of that stuff will be changing, because I know she wanted to encourage about pleasure. And just that it's not a bad thing. So just trying to take the shame away from sexuality was one of the things,
right.
And about relationships as well. So I wanted to just check in with that. And I was going to ask, what is next for you two? Because you've got this great book, and you've got some wonderful workshops coming up, which I did want to plug your website as well, which bloomwork.com. And just if there's anything, and I'm hoping that somebody who might be listening or might listen to the podcast later will contact you, because I'd love to have you up here and get to meet you face-to-face as well.
That would be lots of fun to come up your way. That I would enjoy it very much. If people go to our website, they can sign up for our newsletter. It's free, and it's just a booster shot of inspiration once a month.
And I think that's so key. Because, I think we all need the booster shot. I think it's really important, no matter where you are in your relationship, whether you've been together for a day or whether or not you've been together for over 75 years. I think it's really important just to keep loving, respecting, and embracing. And they can get some really fantastic ideas and get inspired as well if they pick up a copy of your book, which I do believe is available through Amazon as well. But you've also got a link on your website as well. And I rolled over onto it when I was on your site earlier to double check if people can actually purchase it on the site. Are they able to do that?
Well, they can get a link to
Amazon.
Which will enable them to purchase it. It's also available in almost all bookstores.
Mm-hmm.
So that shouldn't be a problem, as our first book also is 101 Things I Wish I Knew When I Got Married.
And I think everybody should be reading that one too, because I think it's really important. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, and I hope I can have you on again, especially if we get you up here in Van City. It would be very exciting. So.
Well, we'd love to do it.
Enjoyed it.
Me too. Up next, we've got Hans von Klaus's Misery Hour. He is a very sexy man to be miserable with. He'll be guiding you through the wee hours with his ambient music and his super hot voice. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. And for those of you guys who are still listening, and some of you are tweeting, because I've noticed on my Twitter feed, which if you are at Sex, you can tweet me at Sexy in Van City, and just say Queer Film Festival, because I have tickets for the show The Owls, and I've also got Other Nature, and those are on Friday the 20th and Saturday the 21st. So just tweet me at Sexy in Van City and just say, I want tickets, and I want Secrets of a Great Marriage as well, because I think you should be listening to the show and have a good time. So please do that. And you've been listening once again to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. And we will be back next week at the sexy hour of 10 o'clock. Thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye.